listening to the Hometown Losers, the St. Louis Sports Podcast, with Josh, Adam, and OJ.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back here to the Hometown Losers Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by OJ and Adam. How are we doing today on this double game day of St. Louis? We got the Blues and the Battlehawks going right now.
Caw-caw. Let's go.
Caw-caw, indeed.
I was going to say, I'm doing good. We got two good games. Well, I was going to say, the fact is, we're not losing. I was going to say, hey, we're not losing, and we're in the second period already. The Blues are up 1-0, and we're doing all right. So I'm doing good here.
So you're saying there's time for us to lose, is what you're saying?
Exactly. There's always time.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of time, especially because the shot total is right now is apparently 16-6 Vancouver.
There we go.
Holy crap, so, in one period, they gave up 16 shots?
They're like 4 minutes into the second period now, but yeah.
Oh,
like
okay. Well, I mean, considering all the things that have been happening lately, you know, we've been trading off some pivotal pieces of our team. You know, what do we really expect? You know, we've traded a lot of folks, and we're getting some draft picks for it, which is great for the future. But I think at this point, we've pretty much given up on the season, so it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah, you're almost wanting the tank. You know what I mean? You're kind of like I kind of okay with them losing every game to hopefully get a better draft pick.
I mean, let's just say that we have better odds right now with landing Bedard than we do actually making the playoffs. So, you know.
I mean, what, you got to be like bottom 10 to get a chance at the first
bottom eight,
or is it two that gets the chance at the first overall?
It's the bottom eight of goes into a lottery, and obviously the further you are down, the higher chance you have.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. Right now they're projecting Columbus to get that first overall pick, and the second is Chicago. But that's again just projected on their current points, the current team, and like their upcoming schedule kind of thing. And it's not obviously taking in luck of the lottery coming out of it. Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yep. Well, we'll probably get screwed on that, so no our luck.
No, Chicago's.
Yep. So
anyway.
Oh my God. Yeah. Please no. Anyways, let's go ahead and talk about our beloved St. Louis Blues. And obviously, Adam, as you just talked about, it's kind of what everybody in the Blues community is talking about currently. Our captain or former captain, Ryan O'Reilly, is gone. So if you've been under a rock for the past week, this literally happened right after our last podcast session here. And I don't know if I said it before, but I'm going to say it now. This is session number 13, the unlucky number 13. But
hey, anyways. It's one of my lucky numbers, I'll be honest with you. So
it's kind of funny because like my lucky numbers are 7-14. Yours is 6-13.
Absolutely. It's just funny. It really is. 6-13. Yep.
But anyways, yeah, so Ryan O'Reilly got traded to Toronto. This was one of the teams that he was linked to quite a bit. That being said, it wasn't for like any at all of the deals that I believe we talked about last week when we were bringing that up. You know what I mean? It was when I took a look at it, the trade for Roar going to Toronto. They had a bunch of different like picks options and stuff like that. But none of them, it really had anything to do with what we end up getting. So the trade went down that Toronto got Ryan O'Reilly. They also got Noel Akari. And we end up getting Adam Gaudet, or it's actually O, so it'd be Gaudet.
Probably.
Sounds good to
say
me.
Say it again, OJ.
I was going to say probably like Gaudet or something because it's G-A-U, right?
Yeah, but it's so the AU because he is Northern Canadian from my understanding from like where he comes from. The A and U makes an O, so it'd be like Gaudier or something like that. You know what I mean? So you're pretty close.
Now he's here in the U.S., so now he gets an American name. There you go.
Now he's Gaudy. He's Gaudier.
There you go, Gaudier. I like it. I don't know why I'm suddenly have an accent, but
we also got a Mikhail Abramov. And we also get three picks for this. We got the first rounder from Toronto in the 23 draft, the 2023 draft third rounder from Toronto, and we get a second rounder in the 2024 draft. Just a few things about that as well, taking a look at this. The projected first round pick is supposed to be 27th overall. That is, of course, by projection. Hopefully Toronto gets knocked out a lot sooner. So that way we move up a little bit. It is not a protected first round pick, which is unlike the other one that we got with the New York Rangers and Vladimir Tarasenko trade.
Yeah. So one of those picks, wasn't it? I think was pretty maybe that was the one you were referring to. It was actually relatively high. Third round one, I think, was belonged to the Senators, I think, as well.
Correct, for the third round pick,
I think that was relatively high, the third round. So basically, we have a few, like three first round picks in the next draft, and then we have a third round pick as well that's relatively high. Gotcha.
But yeah, that third round pick is going to be very interesting because essentially, since this draft is so deep, they're saying that all the like high end third rounds are essentially like mid second rounds to early second rounds. Just depends on how people draft. So like everything kind of gets moved forward.
But that also ties into yes, we could be building and looking, you know, in the prospect, for the future, but we could also be trading those off for an immediate upgrade as well. I mean, I think we've talked about, we be able to trade him off as well for a pick or two as well.
So, let's talk about the war trade in general first, before we get into some of the stuff that now, since we have the packages and stuff like that, we can, definitely take a look at, you know, are we done trading? And I don't think we are. So
I think there's still some options out there for sure.
For sure.
You know, with Barbashev, you know, there's a lot of questions as far as, I was reading apparently, the scouts that were in town tonight, Minnesota, New Jersey, Washington Islanders, the Rangers and Chicago are all still in town. And there's some talks going on. So, I know Barbashev's been rumored of maybe landing with, the Devils, or, you know, potentially Vegas, Tampa, I've heard as well, but at least those that made, you know, possibly made sense for him to land. So,
yeah.
So I want to start with you, OJ. What's your thoughts on this war trade? You know, do you think we got enough, or what's your thought process around now Ryan O'Reilly being a Toronto Maple Leaf?
Well, I mean, we got a pretty decent return. I mean, everyone else is saying he's washed, but you know, I think that's pretty inaccurate. It's just that the entire team's playing so bad. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I think Toronto probably got a little bit of a bargain there, but I think Armstrong got what you could get in this market, given what's happened this year so far. And reasonable trade. Yeah.
And Adam, specifically around the two prospects that we got, what are your thoughts around Goudier and Abramov?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not completely thrilled by that. I mean, obviously, I would like, speaking about the prospects that were, you know, those picks as well. I think that we actually got a decent value out of a couple of guys that were, you know, getting up there in age, especially with their, injuries and whatnot as well. And I think that that's going to potentially help us get, you know, obviously help rebuild and obviously get a younger team, which we really need. I wasn't completely thrilled with the guys that we landed with, but I felt that, you know, I felt it was a pretty decent deal overall.
You know, I'm not hating it. Yeah, I'm definitely happy with like the draft capital, so to speak. But
yeah,
you know, like Mikhail Abramov is like he's 29 years old and he's a center. He's never even been in the NHL and out of the AHL, and he's been only in the AHL for 2 years because he's been playing, I believe, in Russia. Yeah. and KHL and stuff like that. But he's gotten 44 points in 100 games in 2 years. That sounds pretty good. But he's also been a little bit more inconsistent as well. When you take a look at some of his like their junior stats and stuff like that. Plus he's 29, you know, so like, what is that going to do for you, in, you know, trying to get younger and get better? He also, because he's never played in the NHL. Goudier is kind of interesting to me. He's 26 years old. He's also a center. Although he's been moved to wing and stuff like that. We see that a lot with centers in the NHL. But he's been up and down between NHL and AHL, like pretty much his entire career. He's got 70 points in 218 games in the NHL level. That's over a 5 year period. On the AHL level, it's a little bit more impressive. He's got 46 points in 59 games over a 4 year period. So there, when I was not happy because he was not a name that I knew, you know what I mean? Yeah. But like Goudier, I think might be able to do something. He could be, like, again, a third or fourth line guy, probably a third liner. You know, I don't have his physical attributes and stuff like that in front of me, but he most likely screams out a third liner to me. But again, it just depends on, you know, where do we want to go with this, right? And I kind of alluded to it as well. Like, we're getting first round picks, but here's the thing that's really killing me about this, right? So the Blues have the three first round picks. We're projected at number 8. Right now, that's the St. Louis Blues pick. But the other two from the Tarasenko trade and from the Toronto trade, they're projecting that we're going to get the 27th and 31st. Those are two very late back-end picks, right? So that to me is, you know, it's
hopefully
not great.
Be deep,
that's,
a deep
Well, they say it's going to be. They say it's going to be incredibly deep. So those... But again, like obviously you're wanting to get as high as you possibly can.
Well, of course,
you know what I mean?
Of course we are. Sure. But so, at the same time, these guys are going to be unsigned, you know, either, you know, UFAs at the end of the season, and based upon their age and based upon their health, it's like, you know, this, you, we had to do the best we could, you know, at this, at the situation, you know, with the situation at hand. So, and obviously there is even talks about, you know, what happens with Rohrer. Does he stick around up there or not? So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. I hope that's we can get him back. We probably won't. Cause, everything I've been reading, it looks like our cap situation is pretty bad. Yeah. So the best way to like speed up the rebuild might be to get rid of some of these defensemen like any way possible.
Yeah,
if you had say like a third pick away, like do it.
I mean, I mean, I've heard, you know, with you know, some rumblings are with Krug as well. So
yeah, I mean, but even if we could swing a Timo Meier trade, we actually might not be able to afford him even after trading so many people away, because we have so much money tied up in our defense.
Yeah, and the thing about it, too, is, like, so I'm with you guys. I really hope that Rohrer does come back, and it's going to be, like, a Walter situation. Like, he
Kachuk, don't count on it.
Oh, and definitely not. You know, he potentially could. The Toronto definitely cannot afford him looking at next year. They would have to cut quite a few people or try to make some deals, you know, at the draft to be able to get rid of some of their salary to be able to keep them. And that's something they could potentially do depending on how deep they get to the playoffs. But it would be nice to see him come back. To your point, OJ, like with Timo Meier. So he is a restricted free agent that currently is making $6 million a year. So he will be a restricted free agent for one more year since he's 26. So he could sign a one-year deal in a restricted free agency, but he also has arbitration eligible. So essentially that $6 million they're projecting is going to be anywhere between $7 to $8.5 million. I don't think he's going to get 8.5. That's is significantly high, but I do believe that he could get to 7 or 7.5, even with arbitration. You know what I mean? In the open market, he might get 8.5, but I don't see that happening.
Right.
Yeah, so I mean, like, to me, it's just going to be, I don't know. So then that brings up the really the next, you know, next segment for us, I guess, is, you know, obviously, you know, I don't believe the Blues are done, right? But do we trade away players or do we try to go for Timu, then just try to like rebuild around him? Adam, let's start with you, I guess, or OJ, go ahead.
So that would pretty much require trading away some players also, like. You're thinking
for the salary restriction, yeah.
Well, you have to, absolutely.
Draco or Krug, one of those guys, and in order to make room for him, because like you said, he's probably going to get a lot of money in arbitration, even before he's an UFA. So he's not going to be some nice little like $4 million player for you. So you're going to need to clear some room to make sure you can sign enough of a rest of a hockey team. But
if they do clear the room, I think that there's a good chance that St. Louis could land it, because obviously I think that we have better leverage here, especially with having those recent picks, in our pocket, so to speak, versus, you know, some of the other teams that he's been, you know, like I think they were looking at, was it the Canes? I think we're looking at him, and I'm trying to think who else. But there were a couple, and they don't. I don't think they're going to have as much to offer him as we could, or at least offer, you know, in trade for him, I should say.
Yeah. About it though is like, and there's been so much talk around specifically Torrey Krug, Colton Parayko, and and Ivan Barbashev, right?
Barbashev, yeah.
Here's the problem with Torrey Krug. I don't see us getting rid of Torrey Krug, because the fact is, he has a no trade clause, a full no trade clause. So he could completely say nope, you know, to any deal. And why would he, you know, go anywhere else? I mean, he's making $8 million this year. He's going to make $8.5 million next year and the year after that. In 25, it gets to a partial no trade. It's a 15 team no trade list. So literally half the league he can say no to. And his salary comes down to 6.5. But like these next 2 years, are really going to suck when it comes to trying to absorb that contract. You know what I mean?
Right.
And
right.
The Colton Parayko one specifically is, it's only going to get worse, because
I never liked that Krug contract, I'll be honest. So,
yeah. So like for Parayko in the next 2 years, he does not have a no trade clause, but I don't see anybody taking this, because even though like there are teams out there. So like right now, Parayko has been linked to Buffalo, Ottawa, and Calgary. Which are, they're teams that are kind of like more or less borderline teams. They're not, you know, most of the teams that are already like in the playoffs, so to speak, that are looking to make deep runs, they already have their blue line figured out, right? That's the new NHL, that the defensemen are at such a premium. And Parayko might be able to help solidify some of the defensive stuff for any of those three teams, quite honestly. I don't think any one of them is going to be taking his salary, though. Next year he makes $8 million. The year after he makes $8 million. The year after that he makes $8 million. So why would you want to pay that guy $8 million? You know what I mean? So
it's gonna be pretty. Yeah, I mean, he doesn't play anywhere near an $8 million player.
And so I think that's where it's gonna be, you know, pretty hard to move Colton Parayko. Not because he, you know, has a, you know, trade clause or anything like that. It's just because of the contract at that point in time. And it's obviously the same thing with Krug. I mean, he might want to move on, but I don't know. Like, would you want to move on? Like, I don't know.
I mean,
honestly, at this point, it depends if you want to win. Like, if you.
Yeah.
On, OJ?
Definitely depends if you want to win, I guess, because, I mean, he's collecting right now. But if he ever wants to do more than that, then he needs to show it on the ice at some point.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that too. You know, and it's so hard too. We talked about this before in this podcast, and I know I've talked to both of you guys outside the podcast specifically about Krug, is that he's always going to be unfairly compared to Pietrangelo, obviously, because he was the replacement for Pietrangelo. It's just not fair, but you know, that's just how it is. So I'm not terribly too certain, but Ivan Barbashev is a guy that, you know, is also right now that's been linked to quite a few teams. There's like 10 teams that have been linked, but the serious links are Edmonton, Boston, and Carolina. Those are the teams that are making a little bit deeper runs, specifically around Boston and Carolina. I mean, Boston right now might, I don't know, man, they look like a freaking juggernaut. I don't think Boston would be able to trade for Barbashev, though, because they just made some big moves. You know what I mean? And they're trading away all their draft capital at this point in time. Carolina's got plenty of draft capital, but I don't know if they're necessarily wanting to like trade Barbashev for a first round pick or a second round pick. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was gonna say we're probably gonna get for him. I mean, we obviously we're gonna try to get try to go for maybe a first rounder, but honestly, I think maybe a mid round pick would be more what we're going to get more than likely with him.
Well, I'm not terribly too certain, because like what does really hurt his trading value is the fact that he is 27. And after the end of this year, he is an unrestricted free agent. So he is very much like Roar in a rental player, right?
Yeah.
Unless you feel that you can sign him and that's the guy that you want to sign. And listen, his salary is not terrible. It's 2.6 mil like right now this season. I mean, he's probably going to
pretty cheap, you know.
Yeah, it might be right around there, or maybe even a little less, you know what I mean? Because, like, again, like, statistics have not been there this season, but that's for everybody in the Blues. Mm-hmm. So potentially you can say, okay, well, you know, we'll sign him to, like, an average of 2.5 or 2.4 or whatever, you know, for, like, 3 years, right? I can see a team doing that. Right. I don't see Doug Armstrong moving off of Barbashev unless he can at least get a first-round pick. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Yeah, I can see that.
Because again, like he was your second round pick, so you always want to try to get more value out of, more value than what it's worth, obviously. So, you know, and I believe that Barbashev also has played at least to a first round like caliber for a couple of seasons. You know what I mean? So I think that that's part of it as well when it comes to Doug Armstrong's thinking, because it's one of those things that, hey, I can move him if I get a first round, but I'm completely content with keeping him too.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So I'm not terribly too certain when it comes that comes around to that specifically. But I mean, those are really the only two that I feel that we have a good chance of trading. I don't think there's been a lot of talk, but it's mostly just like, you know, on Reddit kind of crap. But a lot of people are thinking that Jordan Binnington will get dealt. I don't see how we can get rid of Binnington at this point.
I don't see that happening.
He's been making games much, much closer for us.
For sure.
What do you do?
We have no defense. So now you're just going to get rid of our last line of of defense, which is our goal. It's like, good God.
You're going to give the keys to the car to Grice. Yeah. Like, even in a rebuild.
No way.
Like,
I'm sorry, but it seems that we're really going heavy after all these forwards and things, and it's like, when are we going to start going after more defensemen, you know?
Yeah, I mean, no one wants to give them up, apparently,
and that's what sucks. It's always like, we really shouldn't be giving up, you know, I mean, unless we have a long-term, unless we have a plan here. I don't know what it is, but it's like, okay, we can build all this offensive, that's great, but if we can't protect our net, we're going to be right back in the same spot we have been for a while now. So we can build a fucking lead, and then guess what? We're going to blow it in the third period again, like we always do. So.
And my thing, though, is like Chychrun, for example, though, from the projections of what, again, we're not in the rooms, we're not part of these conversations, we're not listening to these calls because we're not the NSA. But it sounds like, yeah, exactly right. Yeah. It sounds like Chychrun, they're wanting two first rounders. If not prospects on the offensive side and a first rounder. That's why I don't see Doug Armstrong making that deal. Even though we got three picks right now, you go, okay, I'll go to the draft and try to find a Chychrun and try to get better at it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think at all that would be something that we could potentially do. And that's why this Timo Meier trade, I don't understand why we're so linked to him right now, but apparently we're the forerunner to land Timo Meier, which I don't. Okay, I'll say it from my point. I if you're going to rebuild, just freaking rebuild. You know what I mean? Like, Timo Meier is also going to be a guy that it's at least going to cost a first round, if not more. You just got all this draft capital. You might as well just sat on your team then. You know what I mean? I get it. You're trying to grab a guy that's going to be a restricted free agent. But again, as it comes down to cost and stuff like that, it's going to be super hard. So to afford him, even though you get rid of some, you know, salary and stuff like that or whatever, I don't know. So, OJ, let's get your opinion on this. I mean, do you think that the Blues should go after Timo Meier? Say we can afford him, right? Do you think that he would be a guy that we should go, or should we just go straight into a rebuild?
I mean, we're not really doing a full rebuild anyway, because they're not going to trade like Thomas and Kyrou. So, you know, yeah, I don't mind getting him. Yeah, assuming we can afford him, like, yeah, I guess go ahead and get him and see what you can do next year. Because, I mean, I honestly think a lot of the woes this year were, you know, weren't because of ability necessarily. So I think our defense is probably better than it played this year, like probably by a good bit. Not that they're good necessarily, but they're not this atrocious. I've just never seen like such an unfocused mess. Yeah, it was funny. They actually started looking like they were trying for three games, and then we trade O'Reilly. Now they're back to just being crap again. So I don't, you know, I'm cool with.
I think at that point too, like it really does hit home. Like your captain and one of your best players and leaders on this team is gone. Mm-hmm. It really just hits home, and like you just don't care anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I
we do went through that twice that here. You know, it seemed like back to back. So.
Yeah. And by the way, speaking of crappy defenses and really bad, Battlehawks are down 12-0 to Seattle.
Yep. Womp womp.
I still.
But hey, the Blues are leading 2-0.
Love to see if they're going to be any good, you know.
So.
Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit more about the XFL and the Battlehawks here in just a little bit. But Adam, I wanted to get your opinion on if Timu Meier was on the table. Mm-hmm. You know, should we go after Timo Meier?
It really just depends on what we're going to have to give up for him. I mean, to me, it's I feel like if we have to give up a lot of our draft capital, that's going to hurt us, in my opinion, because especially if we have a draft coming up that's pretty deep. Me personally, I would say let's lean into that. If we think we can actually get some younger guys that, you know, will benefit us in the long run. It just depends, I guess, on where Army sees us right now. As far as, I mean, OJ mentioned he doesn't feel like we're in full rebuild mode. So, you know, I see your point, but at the same time, it really just depends on how much we're going to have to give up for him. True. It's to me. I don't want to give up all of our picks, you know, most of our picks that we just landed and miss out on some good talent coming up too. You know what I mean?
The only thing about it is, I mean, it depends. You don't mind trading the late first rounders as much. That's really kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah. And mean, that's the thing is we have some, you know, some great picks that we can trade for. It's just trade them for. But the thing is, you know what, I'm sure they're going to be eyeballing, you know, those first rounders for sure. But
my thing about it is like use those late first rounders to trade both of them to go up into the higher.
Yeah.
You know, and to the higher rounds, because like let me take a look at this real quick on like the projected order or whatever. Give me one second. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Because I'm trying to think if there's a team that just kind of underperformed. Kind of like, you know, the Blues in a sense, right? I mean, mm-hmm. there's not really one that kind of speaks to me that says, oh, hey, go after them. Maybe Anaheim, but I highly doubt it, because Anaheim obviously has a lot of young talent on their team currently. I don't see them. Well, they may like Anaheim is the third overall pick, or at least what they're projected for, right? They are projected for the third overall pick right now. They could, you could be obviously getting more or higher chance at winning the lottery then at that point in time. And Anaheim could be a team that you could say, okay, hey, listen, we want your first rounder, but we'll give you two first rounders, or we'll give you a first rounder and one of the seconds that we have too. You know what I mean? Something like that. I doubt that they would take that for a first and a second for their first, but they would definitely, I would think that they would want to potentially definitely take a look at two first rounders for a higher end first. You know what I mean? You're getting more draft capital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It makes sense. That,
like how far you're trying to trade up with them, you know, I mean, because other teams probably also recognize that, you know, after the first like half of the draft, the first round, I mean, the quality drops off substantially. I mean, this is a deep draft supposedly, but from what I've been reading, you know, it's still not like it's not like every player in the first round is can't miss or is going to be ready for the NHL soon. It's still like you really want to be in that top five. And after that, it's kind of much more of a crapshoot. So
Well, what is being projected at that the reason why the people are saying it's going to be much deeper is that there is a lot more potential that's coming out of the first three rounds than the past couple of rounds. Obviously, yeah. Again, as you said, OJ, there's really not like except for Connor Bedard, you know, for, you know, Spitali, Carlson, Mikhoff, and even a little bit of Benson. I mean, maybe even Will Smith at that point in time, too. I'm not really sold on Smith, too, when you look at his numbers. Anyways, like there's not many people out there that are like, oh, my goodness, like you have to go out there and grab. Right. Like so right now what they're projecting the Blues to draft is Colby Barlow, which is a pretty good player from Owen Sound. Like he's when you take a look at his stats, look really good. Then you have Callum Ritchie, a center out of Oshawa. Not thrilled with that. And then Lukas Dragovic, which is from Tri-City in the USHL. He's a right-handed defenseman, which, okay, cool. Like, his numbers aren't that great either. So, like, to your point, is it worth being able to do that for? But, again, I don't know. It just really depends. We're not part of those conversations. I just think that, for me, if I have those picks, I'd much rather trade for try to make that maneuver rather than Timo Meier. Just my opinion, but you can't have your cake and eat it too. So it's not like you can wait till the draft and then try to trade for Timo. You know what I mean? Because most likely he's gone.
It depends what you need to give up. If it's like you're too late first in Bull Duke for Timo Meier, like that's probably worth it because any of the picks that you might have given up would be like a home run if they became Timo Meier. Probably neither of them will, and Zach Bull Duke probably never will either. So like. You know, and that was actually kind of like ballpark from what I was reading on The Athletic. You know, they're saying, you know, if you give the Blues first and maybe one of the other first round picks or like the late round picks and throw in Bull Duke, something like that, they might be, you know, you might be able to get him for that. You know, so you might be able to get Timo Meier and still have your own pick, which if you lose enough this year, you still might be in the bottom eight.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely think that the Blues have to hold on to their own 23 pick. I don't think unless you are giving me a very high end talent right now that's young, there's no way I'm giving up that pick. You know what I mean?
Right. But that's what I'm saying. You may not even that. You might be able to give up Bull Duke in a couple late firsts, which would, you know, that's a nice little deal there to me.
Yeah, I mean, it's like so if you look at Timo Meier, like his stats are pretty substantial, right? So he's been in the NHL for this is his seventh year. And again, he's only 26. He's got 316 points already at the NHL level out of 451 games. So he's almost a point per game player. And out of those 316 points, 154 goals. That's pretty substantial. You know what I mean? I think he's got like 30 or 20 something this year already. He's done well. You know what I mean? So. Again, this just comes from my personal preference. And I think the reason why for me personally is just I've kind of given up on the season. You know what I mean? I shouldn't be that way. But like I just kind of given up. It's like, all right, cool. I'm already looking to the future. Just, you know, trade everybody. And so we can go out and get some picks. And then I think we're all restart. That, yeah.
It's kind of upsetting. It's been so long since the Blues have had like that generational player. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Hasn't been since Brett Hull. Like,
yeah,
forget those kind of people, you know, like,
yeah,
get one for a change, huh?
Be nice.
Yeah, like let's go get a Wayne Gretzky and then not trade him after 30 something fucking games.
Well, you know whose fault that is. So yeah, we were just talking about that yesterday.
Anyways,
yeah,
I know.
We were
I
just
know.
Talking about the bitching about the Keenis. What was that yesterday? So anyway,
yeah. So Team My right now has got 52 points, 31 goals, 21 assists. Jesus, but. This is crazy. So he's got 52 points and he's a minus 19. Holy crap.
Yeah, the Sharks are very bad.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. It just opened my eyes a little more than I thought.
Yeah.
Jeez. He's got 13 power play goals. Lord.
Yeah. I say wouldn't be bad to have.
Not for sure. Well, let's move off a little bit here and talk to about something a little bit more, I guess, uplifting. Talk a little bit about the XFL.
That's questionable. I mean, hey, we have the XFL back. and we're showing up to the game. Well, obviously we'll be showing up to the games in numbers on the 12th of March. Looks like that game is almost sold out. There's still a few seats left, but very few. And overall, I can tell you that what ESPN is reporting from week one for the Battlehawks, the game peaked at 2.3 million viewers during the broadcast and an average of 1.6 million. And in St. Louis, more people actually watched the Battlehawks than they did the Daytona 500. So there you go.
Nice. That's actually saying something, too. I mean, like, yeah, obviously, I mean, we're not like we have a.
But I was just going to say, yeah, we're definitely, you know, we're a town that, you know, definitely loves our racing and such for sure. But, you know, it seems like, you know, St. Louis wants their football back as well. The next closest game in viewership was the Vipers at Arlington Renegades, and that was 1.5 million viewers. And that was obviously the first game in the opener as well. So you would expect some, you know, a little bit more viewership with that game because it was the opener per se for the XFL 3.0. So anyway.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think that like when you have something substantial like the Daytona 500, that's what you're competing in. And yeah, as you said, Adam, it's not like we're a huge racing town. Like it's not like we're Nashville. It's not like we're, you know, Talladega or like we're in Tennessee or anything like that, that they have a huge following. Racing. Yeah, of course. It's still going to have a following. And a lot of people, like, they'll watch. That's, like, the only NASCAR that they'll watch.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So, you know, so to me, that definitely helps out. And we know that, you know, St. Louis wants their football back. I mean, we were there last time around when, you know, they were screaming F. Stan Kroenke. And, you know, I got a little hoarse in the throat saying that as well. And by the way, touchdown, Battlehawks.
Touchdown, let's go. Point conversion. There we go.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
So,
this is fucking.
Oh. I apologize. I'll let.
Did they get the 2 points? Okay.
Sorry.
I'm on delay here.
No, oh, well. I apologize. I looked down for a sec and they scored. So they're lining up for the extra 2 point.
Same here. So.
Correct. Yeah.
I have a feeling they're going to make
like,
it.
I'm just streaming this on ESPN Plus. And yeah, they made it. So it's 8 to 12 right now.
Yeah. So, and hey, that was the thing is that like in the last game, there was like nothing going on our offense at all for like the entire game. It was so disappointing. It was like it was a laughing stock.
Our line is trash.
It was trash. It was complete trash. And until I literally was like, all right, I'm done with this. And I was actually my parents at the time. And I was like, all right, I'm done with this. Clearly we've lost this game. I'm going to go ahead and head home. And anyway, I was like, I'll put the game on my phone, just lay it down there, you know, while I'm driving. And with what was like a minute and a half left or something, we're down 15-3. And then somehow McCarron led a drive and finished off with an 18-yard pass to Hakeem Butler to make it 15-9. It was nuts. Yeah. And then after that, we go in and use that the 3-point conversion rule, which is pretty badass. So technically it gets in the NFL, it would be a 2-point conversion at the 10-yard line. At here they have the, what is it? The 10-yard line, it's three. At the 5-yard line, at the 5-yard line, it was three. Is that right?
No. 5-yard line ten line is three, and a 1-pointer, because they do not kick extra points in the XFL, is from the 2-yard line.
Yeah. And so we went for the 3-point conversion, ended up getting it. So then we went up, or then we were, then it was 15-12. And then that interesting rule, I think you wanted to bring up about instead of having the onside kick.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They have the 4th and 15. So you have one shot to make 15 yards, but you start at your own 25. So essentially, because it's kind of the same thing. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of the same thing. You can still take an onside kick if you would like.
Mm-hmm.
And the XFL only allows you, so you can do an onside kick at any point in time, just like in the NFL. But the onside or the 4th and 15 rule is only allowed under 2 minutes, and you have to be trailing, which I love because it's not like you can just spam that button and just get the ball back every single time, right?
Sure.
So, you know, like I love that rule. It's designed to allow more competition, and it's designed to have you know, again, like comebacks, like what we saw.
It is. And the fact is that you're not just seeing people take a knee at the very end. You know, it's like you actually have excitement all the way up until the end of the game, potentially, for some of these games. And they do have that ability to come back. And the fact is we were 4th and 15 at that point, and there were 16 seconds left. And Mr. Austin Parole. I can't say his last name. Austin Parole. Obviously, yeah. A name that we should all, you know, Pearl, very, very famous, or should be a famous name for many people that were Rams fans whenever they were here, ended up scoring on that. And
it wasn't 4th and 15 for that, though. So the 4th and 15, he did.
Well, you're right. He ended up getting the first down, though, after the 4th and 15th, if I remember, obviously, to be able to continue it. Yeah. But he ended up
converted the 4th and 15 and then got the go ahead touchdown. Correct. A little bit later on.
Yeah.
I think there was a 1:26 left when we got the conversion for the 4th and 15. Yeah. Something like that. And then we were just able to run down the clock a little bit, because that was the thing, is like we only needed a field goal to tie the game. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, cool, now you run down the clock a little bit. And, you know, and that's exactly what we did. We just kept driving. And then obviously Pearl got the touchdown, which was a really cool moment to see, because I did not know this. I don't think really a lot of people did. But so Ricky Pearl is the wide receivers coach for the Battlehawks. So obviously Austin on the team, they shared a really cool like moment on the sideline where they were just hugging, and you could tell there was just a lot of excitement. And, you know, Ricky's very proud. I mean, to me, that was just really cool. To be able to
you know, get the first win, you know, for the Battlehawks 3.0, you know, and he got to be there part of it. So that was pretty cool. Very cool indeed. So,
yeah, and I definitely think that, you know, the Battlehawks game was phenomenal. But OJ, to your point, like, yeah, our offensive line was terrible, right? But here's the thing that many people don't really realize when it comes to, specifically to the XFL. Most of these guys in the offensive line have only been together for like 3, maybe 4 weeks. That's not a lot of time to practice like offensive schemes, because a lot of people believe that offensive. Go ahead, OJ.
I was about to say, is I've been reading a bunch of stuff about how rushed this whole thing was putting it together.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, not necessarily going to be this way all season, but it
looked correct. It looked terrible. It should.
I definitely think they had to kick some of the rust off for sure.
Right. Yeah. Wade Phillips, who is the head coach for the Houston Roughnecks, he was an NFL coach for a long time. He recognized that this was going to be rushed, so he put a lot of his energies and his graph to get defensive linemen, because he knew that he was going to be able to dominate the line of scrimmage for at least 3 to 4 games, and he did. Like Houston, I think, got 7 sacks. In the first game, so that's what they're going to, you know, be doing. The defensive linemen always have an advantage with an offensive line that's just not prepared. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know what I mean? Because, like, you know, like defensemen, you just got to run through the guy. Offensive linemen, you know, you got to pass and then pass off, or you got to block and then pass off, or double team on one guy and stuff like that. And then the coverage shifts when they call an audible and stuff like that. And there's a lot of audibles called at the line in the XFL, because the XFL allows the coaches to be able up into the snap, not until the 15 seconds on the play clock, like in the NFL, but they can call out audibles. So if they see something on like the defensive side up in the booth, they can still talk to the quarterback and tell them to change the play. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It happens a lot. So there's just a lot more that, you know, goes into it. You know what I mean?
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
but I think that our offensive line will get better. This was when we talked about this, when we did our deep dive, I thought that our offensive line like looked good physically, like just in the stat sheet, but I couldn't pull up a lot of like statistics around it. Now, again, they're offensive linemen, so unfortunately for them, if it's not a pancake, there's not, or like, you know, sacks allowed. Those are really the only like massive or like two things. And then you get into like, you know, pass rush win percentage and stuff against rush win percentage and mm-hmm. stuff like that as well, right? But there's not a lot that goes into these guys, because the guys that are very good are in the NFL, you know what I mean? So it's going to be interesting, but I definitely thought it was like one of the weaker points of our game as well. But AJ McCarron also did not look great last game. He obviously had good two drives, but he overthrew a lot. And there was a lot of talks about that the wide receivers were running the wrong routes and stuff like that. But I'm like, yeah, but like for maybe two of them. But like for like there was so many. The dude was wide
open. They were
open
there and he like, was clearly way overshot him. It's like, dude, tone it down a little bit. It's like,
yeah,
damn.
It's like the most difficult pass for him is just a little screen pass. You know what I mean? Like,
it's like, oh, good my God. Yes.
5 feet.
That's why I was like, okay, just start running the ball at this point. I was like, you clearly can't throw it. So just fucking run the ball. It's like, God damn, you know?
Yeah.
Awesome. It seems like he's, you know, shaking out, like I said, some of the rust per se a little bit to a certain extent. And obviously in this game here, you know, it looks like our defense kind of needs to step it up a little bit here for sure. Comparably.
They just got stopped, it looks like.
So but I'm like, just saying overall what I've seen in the game. So.
Oh, yeah, for sure. OJ, to your point, like literally it was super funny. So I looked at AJ McCarron. I'm like, man, this is like Paul Crewe. And if you know what I'm talking about, that's from the longest yard, Adam Sandler's longest yard, where he was throwing the games. And it's just like, oh, look, you have Michael Irvin wide open, and he just tosses the ball into the dirt because he's trying to throw the game so he doesn't, you know, do more jail time. So that's what I was, that's what it looked like to me. I'm like, I know he's not throwing the game, but damn, dude, you can't make a throw. Adam, you even said to me at some point, he's like, I think you can make a better throw, Josh.
I totally like, did. I really did. I was like, dude, you could go out there right now and throw better than McCarron right now because he was really sucking. But obviously all is forgotten because of that last minute and a half, you know. And what I wanted to mention earlier is that literally after that, everybody went nuts because of that insane comeback. And online, McCarron, it was like trending in the top 10 on Twitter. Like people were going nuts because they were like, holy shit. And so everything was all forgotten, obviously, you know, and everybody was hugging and everything was great. But at the same time, it's like, I was nervous coming into week two as far as have we learned from that?
The rust off.
Have we shaken it off? Have we done some more drills, you know, where we can, you know, potentially pick up where we last left it, you know?
And to me, it was a prime example of a guy that has a lot of experience winning games for Alabama, for in the NFL, not really winning games in the NFL, but he had the NFL experience. So he was able to stay cool, calm, and collected, even when things were bad, you know what I mean? So I think that right. That's what we needed. Right. And so that's why you have him. That's why people are very high on the fact that AJ McCarron is part of the Battle Hawks, but he needs to get better. He looks a little bit better this game so far from what I've seen, just because I've been watching it like intermittently.
The fact that he's already, you know, performed a quarterback sneak and was able to be successful and scored and everything else here. I'd say that's pretty good so far, considering that we're not in the fourth quarter and we're completely down, you know? So there you go.
He did fumble on that scramble.
He did on the one.
Yeah, right. I saw that. And so I think it would have been I think it was definitely a fumble, but I think it would have been a close call. I mean, obviously they didn't review it because we recovered, but it looked like
they were still reviewing down. Or not necessarily reviewing it, but more they were just looking at it from an analytical perspective, mm-hmm. if he actually did or not, but they weren't, you know, going to say anything at that point, because obviously we recovered it. But
yeah, we had a clear recovery. So
I'm pretty sure Seattle was it looked like they were pretty pissed about that opportunity. It's like the ball's right in front of them, and they were slow on the draw for sure.
That's what happens.
Yep.
Well, speaking of like the XFL in general, I wanted to ask you guys more specifically, just again, in the XFL, just a general topic. Like, is the XFL good for football in general? I mean, it gives obviously guys come out of college that are not in the NFL level, or those people that are constantly on future contracts or on the training teams or practice squads and stuff like that, the NFL, but it gives them a chance to really hone their game and also get to be more in a spotlight, get stuff on tape at a professional level. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But does it do all these rule changes and stuff like that? Is it bad? Because a lot of people think that this is more like video game football and stuff like that. So I wanted to ask your opinions on it. You know, Adam, we'll talk, start with you here. What's your thoughts on it? Do you think it's good for football overall?
I honestly do. I mean, and whenever The Rock came out and they all came out and said, hey, we're going to work with the NFL. I mean, that was never their intent to try to compete with the NFL.
And McMahon said the same thing in 2.0 as well, that they were specifically working with the NFL.
They're working in collaboration with the NFL, and obviously they're never going to be able to compete with the NFL. They know that. This is why, obviously, it picks up the week after the Super Bowl. But this gives some options. And I mean, if anybody saw the opener, the little intro they did the first week, you know, they were talking about a lot of these guys that were given second chances or missed opportunities where, you know, they went and they just, you know, they were, second string, third string guys that just never were called up, so to speak, because they just weren't needed, but they were still good players. So unfortunately, we've talked about this, you know, I think before about how sometimes some of it is luck. You know, you got to be in the right place at the right time, even though you're very talented. You know, sometimes you're just not at the right place at the right time at that point, you know, so this gives those guys a chance to shine. And I think the NFL can benefit from that as well. Not only from some of these guys having another opportunity, but also from the rules as well. You know, there's some points that I think we'd like to talk about where the XFL can actually teach the NFL. There are some opportunities to improve, you know.
Absolutely. OJ, what's your thoughts on this? I mean, do you think that the XFL is good for football? I mean, I know you're not an NFL, fan and stuff like that, but I know that you watch the XFL now because it's football, right? And St. Louis football, which is awesome, too, since we have the Battlehawks. But, I mean, do you think that it's good for football in general?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same. It might fill sort of that role that, like, some of those junior leagues in Canada do, you know, where they, like
– yeah.
Like guys that want to play the sport, and you know, every once in a while maybe one or two of them actually moves up to the NFL or something, right? But like,
exactly, for the most
part, it's gonna be like people that are kind of has-beens or never were's that, you know, still want to play.
Yeah, my feelings on it at least are like that's what it would be like for now. I really believe this might go the way of like the G League and the NBA. And I know that neither of you guys probably know too much about the G League and the NBA, but the NBA, essentially, it's like, they play spring, a lot of spring ball and stuff like that, or summer ball. But there's also like, it's kind of like a minor league team in a sense. So like, if you don't want to play more in college, you want to be like, I'm better than college, but I don't want to wait to like get a higher draft rate, or like a draft pick or whatever, because I don't think that the, you know, this is the right time to be drafted. I'm going to go play professional ball and then try to get signed as an undrafted free agent. There's quite a few players that have come from the G League and have been able to be successful in the NBA. And we're starting to see more and more of that being utilized, right? Where kids are going, yeah, I'm done with college at this point in time. I know I want to get this and I know that I could potentially get there, but college is slowing me down. Or I don't want to be in a professional sense, be competed with against a guy that I know is going to get drafted like first, second overall, and I don't get to play him. You know what I mean? Because like that's what happens a lot. I mean, you only play who's on your schedule. So you don't get those direct comparisons and correlations all the time. So if I am high on one guy, I'm never going to consider the other dude at all. So I think that this is a very good, I think it's overall, it's a good thing for football because, as you pointed out, Adam, this allows the NFL to, you know, talk to The Rock, talk to the XFL, to Danny Garcia and say, hey, listen, we want to maybe think about implementing this rule. What do you guys think about this? Mm-hmm. Is this something
and they maybe
that you
could
do
try
with the
it.
XFL?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe they
exactly.
could try it there and see if it works or not. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think this had a really bad taste in a lot of people's mouth and just the XFL in general because of how they got canceled and stuff like that too. The first rendition of the XFL was kind of ridiculous.
That is, but the second one, the only reason why it was canceled, it was going very, very well until the pandemic. But if we would, I still believe there would still be a good chance that XFL 2.0 might still be around. You know, there might have been some shifts as far as the teams where they wound up, because I didn't necessarily agree with the placement of some of those teams. But I still Los think Angeles, that, New York, like, I really liked the fact that they were going after some, you know, these cities that were hungry, like St. Louis, we were hungry for football. And I think it makes sense to go after and target those cities because they can still bring in large crowds and they can still draw some interest from it. And, you know, but they like, back, go ahead.
Yeah, and like I'm happy with like San Antonio getting a team, right? But I honestly, I'm not happy with the fact that there's three teams in Texas.
Yeah, like
we talked a little bit.
I'm a little.
We talked about this before the podcast today that the Southern Division and the XFL has Houston, they have Arlington, they have San Antonio. Oh, and then they have Orlando, excuse me. All four of those teams, like places, besides I guess Orlando, it's a little bit of ways away. They're not that far away. They have a lot less travel
within driving distance of a few hours.
Right. And the other four teams, you have St. Louis, you have DC, then you have Seattle, and then you have Vegas. It's all over the frickin' place.
So literally from coast to coast, literally from Seattle on the Pacific coast all the way to DC, the Atlantic coast. Holy shit. I mean, I know it is what it is, but it's like, oh my God, why is it that everybody in Texas, you know, they get their own damn, you know.
And I get it. Like Texas is very huge for football and stuff like
for
that.
For sure.
But that means that like Arlington, I'm somewhat okay with getting a football team, even though really, I mean, they have Dallas, right?
Yeah. I was going to say they already have the team right there in Arlington already and called the Cowboys. So
Houston, they have a crappy football team in the NFL. I don't think that they need another team there. I mean, DC, you know, you have the Washington Commanders and really crappy team, but regardless, you have an NFL franchise. Seattle, right. I mean, like, Seahawks were good for a very long time. It is what it is, right?
I mean, obviously, they did the right thing and came back to St. Louis. I wasn't necessarily thrilled by the placement of the other teams, per se, because I mean, pretty much all the other cities have a football team other than San Antonio, but what's the point in putting an NFL team in San Antonio? But, you know, everyone else already had a team, and I'm like, I was hoping that they were going to maybe look at, you know, expanding into cities that didn't, but I understand that they also wanted to make sure that they had venues, but some of these venues are kind of funky too. Like some of their playing in like straight up, like in, it's just kind of weird, like where they're, some of them are playing, but it is what it is. I mean, I hope it works. So,
yeah.
No, me too.
I'm cheering for, you know, viewership. I'm cheering for attendance. I know obviously at the end of the day you're like, yeah, you know, the Battle Hawks, we've got, you know, more fans and more viewers and everything, but obviously I want this to be successful across the board. Yeah, because I want this,
because
to
St. Louis
around.
Isn't going
to
be able to carry the XFL, you know what I mean? So they need it to be all eight teams firing on, so or at least six, and they can move the other two teams or whatever. But
and obviously San Antonio showed up, so which I was happy to see.
Yeah. To your point as well, Adam, like it would have made less sense for them to not come back to St. Louis than for them to come to St. Louis. A, you have a dome, right? Mm-hmm. So you already have something that's not being utilized. Mm-hmm. You saw the crowd response. So when I took a look at the numbers, right, by just merchandising of like who, you know, like buying merchandise and actual team apparel at the play at the venue. So directly from the XFL or online, obviously. We literally tripled everybody else's. The only other one that was even close to being in our realm or like had, I guess, a higher numbers than like the average on the league was Houston. Well, they had Walker, who was doing phenomenal. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So and they were undefeated, you know, before the pandemic hit. So there's a lot of excitement around that. But we were also had the highest attendance by average and by volume. I mean, for the fact that the third game, which never happened because COVID, you know, came to town, we were going to be literally opening up the upper deck. Mm-hmm. And we had
– And they had,
I mean,
sold
like, you had, you hadn't
a
seen
lot
that
of that
the
because
Louis
they were opening up in sections.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
– Literally, so they opened up the first two on the 50. Go – no, OJ.
I'm mad that game got canceled where they were going to have
Dude. I had tickets for that damn game in the upper deck. I was like, I'm going to sit up there with the real freaking fans in the upper deck, and it's going to be awesome. And they freaking canceled it.
The two midsections that were up in the upper deck, that were on the 50-yard line. So you obviously had one on one side of the stadium and one on the other side of the field, obviously. Both of them, though, both of them, and you're talking about a couple hundred tickets, sold out within 8 minutes.
Yep.
And I'm like, holy crap. So they're like, all right, we're going to open up another section. And it just
and they just kept opening out, so. Section by section, because that's how they went. That's how they had to do it. They're like, we're not going to open the whole thing because it makes sense, you know, because from a staffing perspective and everything, and they have to open, you know, like the restaurants and those things and the have the ushers for staffing. So I understand it took them a little bit, you know, took them a couple games to get to that point.
They have to
open section by section, which they did that perfectly. And I'm hoping that, you know, maybe we can get back to that point.
Yeah,
I mean, it looks like I looked on Ticketmaster this morning and it looked like there were a few seats available, but most of them that are non-resale tickets were just like single tickets that were left, you know, here or there. They were kind of just kind of scattered here and there. I mean, I looked in section 128 where we're going to be sitting at, and there was like one seat, one lone seat, and that was it.
Well, Jay, so if you want to go to the game, you can buy that ticket.
Yeah.
Come sit in our section.
I have to, damn.
Yeah, right. I mean, and that's the other thing too, is that they were selling them at an affordable price as well. They felt like we're going to get our fans in and we're going to do it cheap, and so it's fun, and it is not, you know, you're not going to break the bank. So looking at you, MLS.
That's why I think this would be successful. Like,
yeah,
it's good to have just a non-corporate league. You know what I mean? Like, bring the sports back to the common man where it all came from in the beginning. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the rich folks have stolen it away from all of us, driving up all the ticket prices and stuff. Yep. Normal person can hardly afford to go to a game at this point.
Yep.
So, you know, I say bring it back to the poor people.
Hell yeah.
That's what, you know, the crowds are going to be crazy.
Ignore your TVs for a little bit, because that was just a ridiculous play.
You're going to have a bunch of low-down people.
Yeah. God damn it.
Gotta be kidding.
We were driving, had a chance.
Oh, my God. I just seen that, but oh, my God.
Yeah, like.
Oh, my God. Cringe. We somehow landed with the ball again, but wow, that was cringe. So we're
it's like a loss, like 28.
Good Lord. So thankfully, it's almost the half with like 50 seconds left. But oh my God, that was terrible.
Whatever.
Oh Lord.
Anyways.
I could have went up with it. Anyway, that was very cringy. So I'm hoping that we see a better game than this, because this is a little embarrassing right now. It is what it is.
I mean, we were doing fine before that. But
I know, geez. But this is embarrassing right now. I mean, there's been a couple plays that McCarron has made that's been obviously that fumble earlier. Yeah, the second fumble now. So maybe I need to turn the game off.
We need to trade for Jordan Ta'amu.
Yeah, hey, thank you. Like,
that's what everybody was saying. Please. Like, how do we not land him again? I'm pissed.
I'm guessing. I saw that he was in the USFL. So I'm guessing he wasn't able to, like, go to the XFL right away. So it's kind of like a more recent thing he got over here. But then again, they also didn't retain the head coach, which I don't know why. That dude was good.
Yeah, he was.
And so that's – they did a draft for, like, the quarterbacks and stuff like that. So Jordan Ta'amu was there, but – I can understand why they decided to go with AJ McCarron, which is going to be a bigger ticket getter first and foremost, because it's an actual NFL recognized name, and at least from college football for sure. You know, so, and plus technically he's got a better pedigree. That being said, it would have made a lot more sense to go get Jordan Ta'amu. You know what I mean? But whatever.
So now DC is basically our old. They have not only do they have Ta'amu, but they also have Jonathan Hayes, our former coach, and he's now their OC. So
you can't tell me that St. Louis AJ McCarron career backup is a bigger draw than the throw-in Samoan. Like, come on, dude. You know everyone's supposed to see Jordan.
Listen,
Tom.
as a fan of the Battlehawks, and especially of XFL 2.0, 100% I'd much rather have Jordan, especially Jordan looked much better than what McCarron is. But no, I completely disagree with you, OJ, that McCarron is a better draw because he's a two-time national champion, technically three. He just started two of the games. He was also a runner-up in the Heisman voting twice. So, like, I mean, at some point, yes, he got to Cincinnati when he got drafted, did not do anything in the NFL. That it happens to a lot of players, right? But
yeah,
again, like, he's a better ticket draw, and he's the safer bet. You know what I mean? Because, again, he's got a better pedigree than what Jordan Tamu even had, even with the XFL last year. Although,
I just think, based off of last year, I just think it's really important to have a mobile quarterback in this league.
AJ McCarron
really
isn't. He's always in the pocket, yeah.
It really
lets that's my thing about it. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It helps your line.
I 100% agree. And that's my biggest. Listen, I'm not saying that McCarron is the truth. I'm not a McCarron fan because I hate the Tide. Cannot stay in fucking Alabama, right? So I've never liked McCarron, but I was excited the fact that we had McCarron because it's like, oh, cool. Like, you know what? We have a dude that, you know, has won some shit. So maybe we have some of that championship, you know, pedigree. It's the reason why Toronto wanted Roar. I mean, he's a good player, but he also has the, you know, leadership and the championship mentality, right? So I'm like, okay, cool, we got this. But then, you know, but I want to hate him. So, like, you know, when he did not show up for the first, like, I don't know, like, what, fucking 50 minutes of last game last week, then I was like, yeah, this guy needs to go. He's trash. Like, we need to, like, look beyond AJ McCarron. And, yeah. I mean, obviously, like, potentially that could be the case, like, he's fumbled the ball twice here, one time, you know, like, wasn't really his fault on the second one. I mean, the line kind of let him down, but it's still, you got to hold on to the ball. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's number one.
That's basic.
Yeah, ball security, man. Mm-hmm. So we've kind of already tiptoed around it a little bit. Let's wrap up a little bit of XFL talk here and talk about, like, what can the NFL learn from the XFL? Because, Adam, you alluded to this earlier, but the reviewing process, it's just in the XFL is so refreshing, right? To be able 100%. To hear this what's going on in the video review.
Yeah, this would have saved us a lot of damn heartache in the freaking Super Bowl, right? They could have just sat there and explained and showed all the 360 degree angles of the so-called controversial hold, you know, on Juju. So,
well, I think that is a
We didn't see that freaking other angle. Not to go down that rabbit hole, but I'm just saying we didn't see some of those other views on the national broadcast until like a week later. My point here is the XFL, they are showing you like 360 degree views damn near. And you get the full explanation and why they rule it that way. It's like, why would you not want to have that transparency? You know what I mean? Fact is, it's not, and you can't have the argument, oh, that's going to slow things down. The XFL has actually proven they're actually faster. These games are, because of the rules changes, these games are actually going faster than the NFL. So
much faster.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But no, I 100% agree. Like, I actually think that helps it makes the viewing experience so much more fun. Because
absolutely.
You're spending less time being mad at the refs for doing something. Yeah.
And no more this, oh, they're cheating, this is bullshit, the refs are in on it, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, tired of that.
Just even fucking, if you disagree, you're like, okay, that was a reasonable thing, right?
At least you can see it. At least you can understand their point of view, you know?
So, and like, exactly. That happened in week one. There was a touchdown that it was ruled a touchdown, but it was a defensive back that caught the ball first. The wide receiver in the end zone seemed to rip it out of his hands and like they called it a touchdown on the field, right? But in the end zone, whoever has possession first, when they are down, it's different than what is on like a live field, right? So when you're, you know, obviously not in the end zone, should have been ruled an interception, but on the field, it was ruled a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Now they go to the review and you can hear him. It goes, there's just not enough evidence to overturn this, right? So we're just going to have to let it stand.
For sure.
I look at that and go, literally my reaction was, man, like, I don't agree with that call, but I can understand what they're looking at and why they said that.
And that's
okay. So I'm not pissed off at what happened anymore. Yep. You know what I mean? I'm pissed off at the league or saying, oh, the refs are involved in this and crap. Now to back to the point though, Adam, like of would it have cleared up stuff for the Chiefs?
I think it would at least help some to see some of those other angles.
No, time out. Okay, it wouldn't have because but it wasn't reviewed. That's the reason why.
I understand that, but the XFL, Josh, the XFL shows you things that aren't even technically under review, that were even so-called controversial. They will literally pull it up on the right-hand side of the screen and show you those things, just like that.
That is true,
fumble from before. They will review those things and not necessarily call it a review, but they will at least share with the audience and explain it. And I think even that in itself is wonderful to have.
Yeah, and that's a good point too, because I did forget about that as well.
Yeah,
quite honestly.
Yeah, but
yeah. Because, so that's a very good point. Yeah.
Yep. It doesn't have to be an actual booth review or whatever for them to actually like, hey, let's take a look at this play and blah blah blah. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. Go ahead, OJ.
I was gonna say it's interesting that you guys are bringing that up, because this makes me think of the company that does the total opposite. Is like, if you watch Mizzou basketball on that, well, I guess it's not the SEC network, maybe it's the NCAA, but on the SEC network, like, if there's been so many calls where you're like, I want to see that because I don't think that's bullshit. Mm-hmm. They don't show any of those.
It's like, what are you hiding? Yeah.
It feels like they're hiding something from you because they don't want you to get mad at the rest for screwing up. So, like, they don't even play the angles. That's what I'm saying. Like, they don't even, like, discuss it. Like, it's just – we just pretend that didn't happen.
Just happened, whatever. Yeah.
I do think, like, there are a few things about, like, the access that we get that I'm okay with it as a fan, but I just don't see it lasting a long time. For example, like, being able to hear the play call on live TV.
I understand is not going to necessarily happen. Yeah.
Yeah, like, I think they're going to keep it for this year, maybe next year, but they're eventually going to have to go away with that, because eventually people are going to get smart. They're defensive backs that have mics. So there could be a dude literally watching the program and then calling down to them. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like,
That or they're going to have to put it on a delay or whatever, you know, like a minute or something.
Yeah.
Which 100% they could do, because that would solve that problem, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, like, at that point in time, it's already, you know, delayed. Like, it's, as you said, it's delayed and then it's over with or whatever.
Yeah.
I do like being able to hear the refs too, when they're talking in the huddle. That's cool. Mm-hmm. But the coaches, hearing what they're talking about on the sidelines and stuff like that.
Having that all access thing is wonderful.
The post-play interviews, I'm not necessarily a huge fan of. The reason why is, like, it's cool to, like, see him and be like, hey, you know, like, how'd you think of that interception, and see them in that moment when they're like all hyped up and ready to go. But most of the time it's,
And on top of it, they already have a shortened play clock anyway. They reduced it down from like 40 to 35. And there's other parts of it as well where they, I definitely think the on-field, like, things are a little excessive.
Dude, so, like, because it's essentially like with Kurt Warner's old stuff. I want to thank my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. You know, I just saw Isaac running a post pattern. He beat the defender and he looked absolutely phenomenal, like, doing it. So I just threw him the ball and he just walked in. It turns it into, I would like to thank my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. That's all the time I have for the day. See you guys later. What it turns into, almost. Because they don't have time to say anything. So,
yeah, they don't have any time.
But again, I think it's fine tuning a little bit. So, you know, just let them catch their breath and then talk to them, you know, and be like, hey, you know, so, like, this is what happened. And, you know, we're catching up with
him. Or, like, talk to them on the bench or something, you know, at that point.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think that's cool, though, because I think it is important for young kids that want to be football players to watch that stuff, because you can see the joy. You're not just seeing them dance and stuff like that. You're hearing it from their mouth, too.
For sure.
The feeling.
And you get to learn a little bit more about it, too, honestly, for folks that don't really understand it. You know, you're learning more about the game.
Well, yeah, especially at a higher level, you know?
Like, yeah.
Exactly. Well, I mean, it's very high level, actually, compared to most people. So, sure. I mean,
yeah, exactly. It may not be the mountaintop, to your point, OJ, right, of being in the NFL. But these are most of these guys have been playing college. Like, they're actually, I think, pretty much every single person, except for a couple of, like, international people. They've all been college players. You know what I mean?
Right.
So that says that they have a lot of high end talent, you know, regardless. It's not NFL level, but yeah.
Yeah.
Did you also want to?
Go on, Adam.
Well, I was just going to mention, do you also want to pick up where we mentioned earlier about the onside kick rule and the 4th and 15 conversion?
That's what I was just about to get to.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so for anybody that doesn't understand the XFL, right, I think I kind of said it before. I think I did. I'll just say it again. So if you are trailing in the game and it's under 2 minutes, you are able to go for a fourth and 15 from your own 25. If you make that 15 yards, then you get to keep the ball, and it's just like an onside kick. You can still do an onside kick, and you can do an onside kick at any time. You're only able to do this fourth and 15 from your 25 in the first under 2 minutes to go in the game. Not the like just in the half, but at the game or for the end of the game, excuse me. And you have to be trailing. I like this rule because it makes it more of a 50-50 to me than what onside kicks are. You know what I mean? Like onside kicks percentages have gone up for sure in the NFL, but their percentage is still just abysmal. You know what I mean? That's right. I'm actually going to take a look at that onside kick.
Yeah, the odds rate. They're like minimal. They're like, who knows? But
yeah. So here's the thing. In 21, it was 18%. In 22, it was 13%. So like you have 13%, and yes, the 15 yards. Maybe a lot, right? But at least it's closer to like a 25% chance. They have a fighting chance. They're not trying to go in there with, you know, against George Foreman with one hand tied behind their back and hoping to God that George Foreman falls down and then the way you can punch him when he's down. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it gives them at least a fighting chance at a possible comeback, which we saw in week one, which was awesome. You know, I mean, it's at least it gives them a fighting chance, but it also puts their defense, you know, the team that has the upper hand here that is obviously winning, it puts, you know, they're going to test their defense as well and make sure that they are obviously playing all the way until the end at that point. You know, it's no longer just going to be, take a knee and you walk off the field. You know, it's playing, you know, the full game.
What are you guys' thoughts on the 1, 2, and 3 point conversions in this? I mean, I think it's kind of cool that you're able to catch up at any point, but it is kind of weird to be able to
get
3 points for sure. 9 points.
Yeah, I honestly feel like 3 points is too much, but maybe I'm just being a traditionalist. You do want to be careful not to get to the point where it's like Family Feud, where like it doesn't matter if you win the first two rounds as long as you win the last one. You know what I mean?
Like, look at San Antonio against us. You know what I mean? Yeah. We were able to score a touchdown, get a 3 point, and then an onside, well, not onside kick, but a fourth and 15, and then end up winning the game all in a minute and 26 seconds.
Right. And I think they designed the XFL to kind of be heavily offensive, you know, the offense side.
Not offensive.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I was trying to say on the offensive side. Not offensive, but offensive side in the sense of they want, you know, because obviously they want that excitement, you know, higher scores and everything else. You know, they want all that, you know, they want that excitement in the game. Faster paced, higher scoring, you know. It keeps fans excited, you know? And anyway.
Yeah. And that's by the way, just speaking of McCarron, this is the one thing I cannot stand about McCarron, especially the fact that he's in, he's a pocket passer. It's 3rd and 9. And what does he do? He throws short of the fucking sticks. Come on, man. Be competitive and throw the ball. He had 3 fucking routes down the field past the fucking sticks and he throws it to the dude underneath.
Wow.
Whatever. 4th and 1, just go for it. Like, whatever. Okay. Anyways, sorry. I do think that having the ability to catch,
they're not even gonna go for it, are they? The 4th and 1, damn.
No, they're gonna punt. Of course they're gonna punt. But anyways,
thrilled with this coach. I don't think he's very.
I will. So here's the other thing too, because they're about to punt.
Down.
I love
not go for it anyway.
Because there's plenty of time left. I mean, you're only down by
not the fact of how we've only had one touchdown. Oh, that's all right. Whatever.
Yeah, they've only had one touchdown too, though. You know what I mean? So that's the way you got to look at it. I mean, there's 28 minutes left. Like, so, like, there's plenty.
Well, apparently, all McGarry needs is the minute and a half. So, all right.
Pretty much, that's what we're signing up
he's
for.
He's the Pat Mahomes of the XFL or the XFL. Apparently, you only need 14 seconds or whatever. No, I'm just being stupid here and saying he only needs like 14 seconds or whatever. You know.
Was it fumbled? Yes, we got the ball back. They just touched it, I think. Yeah, we just got the ball back and we're on there like 15. Holy shit.
How in the actual hell? No, I haven't actually seen. Is that what they called it? This is nuts.
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
Like, yeah.
Okay.
Dean Vandolino.
Okay.
He's walking off the field. I think he went to field and ended up touching it, and the ball like it kept going, and we ended up recovering it.
That's funny.
See.
Wow. So I am behind you now, Josh.
That's crazy. I'm way behind. Yeah, so we actually ended up, so we actually ended up getting the ball back. Yep. Ended up touching it, and then therefore we got the ball. That's funny.
Yeah, I think what happened was one of our guys was coming. No, he just flat out missed it. There was no one pushed into him. He literally just missed it. They're trying to review it to see if he touched the ball or not.
Oh, man. You can see people's NFL hopes die right before your eyes.
Die in that one moment. In that one moment, he's walking on the field going, I'm going to be stuck here forever.
Yeah, damn it. I'm not getting picked up.
Yeah, I love this where they have like all these different angles here. This is awesome.
Yeah.
So basically to the people that are listening, they're doing a kind of a booth review. I don't know if it's officially a booth review at this point. I'm not listening to it, but they're basically going up to the command center here and they've got three different angles.
Yeah, all turnovers. Dude. So yeah, so that's what team was just like in the NFL.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know what? I also want to note that this is a short week also. We're playing on Thursday after playing on Sunday. So
very short.
You know, you could forgive the team for being a little not so good. I mean, I believe
especially in their second week, you know, damn.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's tough to like get cohesion going when you have that little time for practice and stuff.
Yep.
So I mean both teams are in the same circumstance, so it's not like
plus it's late for them too. It's out. You know, I mean, it's 9:30. You know, as far as if they're Central Time, but it's only 7:30 out there out west. So
yeah. Technically, Seattle had it worse because they played the late game on Sunday.
Oh, did they?
Yeah. Well, that was just a terrible call. I don't understand why you're trying to run a screen, a bubble screen on that. Like it's second and like six. You're on a okay, whatever. All right, look, we got to
anyway. Yeah, let's wrap this up. Yeah, before we get, we're gonna be sitting here watching the game. Otherwise,
yeah.
There's only a couple of things that I want to talk about the rules here, but like one of the rules that they're trying to bring the kickoff back, and they're trying to still do it safely. I love this rule where essentially the kicker kicks the ball off at the 25 yard line, right? But if the ball goes out of bounds or even goes into the end zone, the offensive team gets to start with the ball on the 35 yard line, right? So they want return. So you have to like be very precise on where you kick the ball. And what they do is to stop it to where like OJ, like back when you and I were like on kickoff and stuff like that, where we're like 30 yards away from the guy, we're just running as hard as we can and just like knock somebody out. Right. They don't have that. You're literally 5 yards away from each other. And you cannot, no one on that line can move until the receiver catches the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
One's at the 30 and one's at the 35, and then you just got to wait, and then they can go at it. It's like craziness.
It's cool. The dick again.
It's a good way to make it, more safe. Because,
But still have the exciting play of the kickoff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right. So the opportunity to return and all that good stuff.
Fucking Christ, man. So after all that, McCarron throws it short twice, goes for a field goal.
Well, you're way ahead of us.
You're way ahead. Holy crap.
Yeah, missed the fucking field goal. Doink. Great.
Wow,
we need a new kicker.
Yeah, and so that's on the kickoff.
We need bad players this time. We got good players last time.
Yeah. on the punt, though, speaking of the rules, on the punt, it's very similar to the same thing. Where if the ball goes out of bounds, because that's the whole thing about punter. I mean, if you could direct the punt to like on the 1 yard line and go out of bounds, boom, they're pinned down the 1 yard line, right? Doesn't happen in the XFL. You punt the ball. If it goes out of bounds or into the end zone at all, immediately you get to the start with the ball at the 35. So again, they're just encouraging rules. I like that rule because it adds more excitement to it. And it but it does take away like
rule 35. Gotcha.
It makes it, yeah, exactly. It makes it more exciting because, like, to me, like, it does get kind of boring in like defensive games where all they're doing is they're fighting for field advantage for like two solid quarters. It's like, come on, man. Like, somebody do something, right?
Watch playing.
Where did Russolino actually go to? Because we were talking about kickers a second ago. So Russolino was our beast.
DC.
Let's see. Where's he at? You said DC? Did everybody go? Yeah. Did everybody go to DC?
I don't know.
Let me check.
I think he's
in Arlington. He's in Arlington. Okay.
Oh, he's in Arlington. Okay.
Apparently. Yeah. But he was, we were there for that, the XFL's record longest field goal, 58 yards. 58
yards.
Oh, yeah, 58 yards. Yeah.
And back I was in 2020. Hit, you know, a 36 yarder this year. That'd be cool.
Yeah. You're not lying, man.
But anyway.
But, I mean, kind of in conclusion, I guess, to what we're talking about, because we're just going to have to, like, sign off and just watch the damn game at this point. But, I mean, like, there's a lot, I think, that the NFL can learn from the XFL for sure. There is one thing that did not get brought back from 2.0 to the 3.0. And I don't know if you remember this, Adam, but the double lateral pass where you could
have I forgot about that.
Passes as long as it's behind the line of scrimmage.
As long as behind the line of scrimmage, yeah.
And so to paraphrase, because this is not the direct quote from him, but essentially it's what he said. That's the stupidest idea I've ever heard. That was from The Rock. He's like, this is a stupid idea.
Yeah.
Hey, that's the thing is they just try to be different. So, you know.
Yeah. And like they were trying to add more excitement to it. You know what I mean? I get it.
Yeah, for sure.
But like,
and they wanted to be different from the NFL. And I understand that, you know.
That's getting too much into changing the sport itself, though.
Exactly. Not making little changes like they do for the kickoff. The kickoff is, in a sense, the same thing. You're just moving them closer and not allowing them to start. You know what I mean? But it's the same
until
thing.
Until the
really.
Catch, yeah.
You know what I mean? Exactly. So, like, I like that a lot. You know, there's, you know, the 1, 2, and 3 are kind of, you know, like the for the after, you know, you don't kick an extra point. I mean, again, you're just trying to go for excitement and stuff. That's cool too, but it's a, as you said, OJ, the 3-pointer does kind of bother me a little bit. I'm okay with the 1 and 2, but I'm not really okay with the 3, to be honest with you. But,
well, and the other thing is the 1 point right now, like they need to fix that too, because there's no reason basically to go for 1 point at this juncture. You know what I mean?
Because so the reason why the NFL, you have teams that go for 2 points because it's on the 2-yard line. Well, in the XFL, 2 yards is a 1 point. Put it on the damn 1-yard line. So all you have to do is like pretty much plunge it in forward.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, and that way it's a little bit more automatic. So that way you're going to see, did we just recover a fumble? Holy shit. We just recovered a fumble.
You're going to need to stop.
I was going to say, we got to wrap this up, man.
Yeah.
I know. I apologize. Okay. Anyways. So again, I think there's a lot that the XFL can do that can help out the NFL. We'll see what happens in long due time. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
All right, gents. As always, it was great talking to you. Kakaw. And
Kakaw.
Let's go Battlehawks.
Let's go Blues. Let's go Battlehawks. We're still leading. The game's almost over, the Blues, I think, as well. So
yeah.
There you go.
Let's go St. Louis. Let's go Blues. SC. And
St. Louis SC, hopefully course, we can do something there.
Of course, we got the spring training games coming up here this week.
Yep.
Soon enough, the World Baseball Classic as well.
Which I think is going to be really fun to cover as well. I think that'll be fun to watch.
Oh, yeah, dude. Apparently, the Cardinals organization has like 19 players in it.
Yeah, I read about that. I was like, holy shit.
So.
It's like the Blues back when we had Yaroslav Halak and shit like that for the Olympics. We had like almost half our team on like Olympic teams. You're like, holy shit. But anyways. All right, guys. Again, as I said, it was great talking to you. We'll catch you next week here on the Hometown Losers podcast.
Hey, this is Josh. Thanks for checking out and tuning in to the Hometown Losers podcast. Check us out next week as we continue our silliness and talk a little bit about the St. Louis sports scene. Catch you next week.